And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Visit DirecTV.com. High-speed internet service required. Terms and restrictions apply.
Hey everybody, Scott Burnside here for another edition of Two Man Advantage, the Athletic Hockey Show. Man, time is winding down about 2.5 weeks, give or take, to the start of the NHL playoffs. Lots going on, but I want to welcome in my partner and good friend, Pierre LeBrun. And first of all, how are you feeling, my friend? It's been a tough few days for you as you joined the ranks of the vaccinated.
Yeah, well, just before we went to air, our producer Jeff and I comparing notes. both had a tough 24 hours, but it's all good. It's all good, you know. I think it's a good sign. It means that the vaccine's doing its work. But yeah, I was in bed for a good 20 hours. It was not pretty, but coming out of it now, my friend. If my voice sounds a little shaky, it might be because I'm still coming out of it, but I'm ready to go.
Yeah, well, and we, of course, everything is shot through the prism of the National Hockey League and the game of hockey here, but certainly, you know, with the availability of vaccines here in the United States at an unprecedented level and hopefully things getting better and better in Canada, it does sort of set up an interesting dynamic as we move forward. What it might look like late in the playoffs, the ability for teams to cross the border. I mean, still so much unknown. But the other thing, and I haven't really given it much thought, maybe because I didn't have any side effects, and of course, it's always only about me, but that's got to be some of the issues, right? And we know that a lot of the teams in the United States have given players and staff the opportunity to go and get vaccinated and have squared away some time to do that. But boy, you'd want to make sure your schedule allowed for these kinds of, you know, 24 to whatever it is, 30, 48 hours of potential side effects when you're contemplating the vaccines, right, in terms of being able to play hockey.
All the more, you know, perhaps thorny an issue for the Canadian teams is that, you know, none of the Canadian teams want to jump to Q, of course.
Right.
And so, you know, I'm 49 and just got my shot in the natural rhythm of things because it was 40 and over right now. In Ontario, anyway. But, you know, eventually you're going to get to the 20 and over players here in Canada. Is that going to be right around the start of the playoffs or in the middle of the first round? So, yeah, interesting. But I would imagine players will want to get it as soon as possible. No question. And I should mention, by the way, interesting tidbit that I came across from the Monday's Board of Governors meeting, in which I'm told that Gary Bettman... let's put it this way. He had everyone's attention. Talked about on Monday's call to the governors that the league is pretty much almost run out of runway here to reschedule games. And that please do not let your guard down with the protocols because, and this is a governor that relayed all this to me, because, you know, if your team has a serious outbreak like Vancouver, not to pick on Vancouver, the Canucks didn't do anything wrong, but if your team has a serious outbreak at the outset of the playoffs, that could be it. We're not delaying the playoffs.
Yep.
The season could end that way for a team. And it's a bit chilling to think about, given everything that every team has gone through to get to this point and to sort of forge ahead and play in this pandemic season. But boy, would that be a horrible thought. That a team season could end with an outbreak, but there's really no other choice. I don't know what the league could do. We're talking about a serious outbreak here, not a few right. days delay, but if we're talking about a 3-week outbreak like the Canucks went through and with the variant, that's a scary thing. And so it's interesting that was brought up on Monday's Board of Governors call, And I think the point is not only that the Canadian teams remain at risk, but that the message was probably just as much for the American teams who are mostly vaccinated now, Scott, that do not let your guard down, right?
Right. Yeah.
And so it was interesting to hear that Bettman sort of covered that in Monday's call.
Well, and it's a great segue because we'll talk a little bit about the new broadcast deal announced on Tuesday between the NHL and Turner Sports. But I thought it interesting during sort of the latter stages of the media briefing, and Gary was asked about protocols and some of the things that were that may be in the offing as we head toward the end of the regular season and start of the playoffs, and he talked about the protocols being effective, and I'll use the quotes here, particularly when they're adhered to,
right,
which seems to me to go with what you're saying is a very, a not so subtle reminder that don't be going outside the box. Don't be at this stage of the season, especially, stay vigilant. And hopefully that's what happens. So,
right. Yeah. And listen, I mean, I'm sensitive to Robin Leonard's comments from last week. And, I was recently talking to a coach who, hasn't seen his wife in a couple months. And,
yep.
Because they're on separate sides of the border. There is a huge human side to all this, a mental health awareness side to all this. And it's been hard, but I hate to say this, but that's what everyone signed up for. This is how the year would play out. And it's super hard, and I really feel, for the players especially, but they, I don't see any reason why the protocols would soften from here to the Stanley Cup. If anything, you want to make sure you stay on it so that, like I said, you don't want a team season to end in an outbreak.
Yeah, no, you're right. You've traveled this road. Stay on it and get to the end, right? I mean, it's pretty simple stuff. Although I'm with you. Well, especially the CDC just announced this week, sort of the relaxed on the guidelines with the not having to wear a mask outside and being able to do certain things if you're fully vaccinated, all those kinds of things. And really, it's a reminder of if you get vaccinated, you are going to be able to get closer and closer to a normal life. Well, mm-hmm. I mean, the NHL, that's not part of, theirs isn't a normal life. So you can't get there just yet. I mean, soon enough, but got some hockey to play yet. So let's move on. What did you make of Turner Sports sort of coming a little bit out of left field for the B package? I think, I don't think it was all that big a surprise that NBC was going to sort of move on from its longstanding relationship with the National Hockey League after ESPN got the big package. But lots of discussion about, okay, who might come in and fill in the gaps with the smaller B package. I thought it was sort of a breath of fresh air. Very interesting that Turner Sports lands that package, the possibility with HBO Max to get in on the coverage mm-hmm. of the NHL. And what is there not now just an open door for another team here in Atlanta? I've already made plans now. I'm going to rent out some space here at the house in case the broadcasters need a place to stay when they come do their shows.
I think the NHL has done that twice, Scotty, and I think it's that door is closed forever. No, I never saw Turner coming into this at all. Really interesting. You kind of assume that if it wasn't NBC, it would be Fox, or would they go streaming? Would Amazon get in there? Had not heard a whiff of Turner until it happened. And I know that from all accounts, it was really out of left field for the NHL as well. So, given these pandemic times and where money is for a lot of people, I think the league ends up doing okay here with ESPN and Turner.
Yeah, no, it's good stuff. Okay, Are you edging toward sort of playoff mode? That was a huge win for Montreal against Calgary on Monday evening. To me, that takes a significant amount of pressure off the Canadians. It's hard to imagine either Calgary or Vancouver, even with some games in hand, sort of challenging in the North. There's still a terrific dogfight in the Central Division for fourth place with Dallas Stars and Nashville Predators. And you know what? I got so excited about talking to you and hearing how you were feeling. I forgot to mention we were going to have Stan Bowman, the GM of the Chicago Blackhawks, join us in a few minutes. Blackhawks have fallen off the pace in the Central, but lots of interesting dynamics within the Central Division vis-a-vis fourth place. How are you feeling playoff gear up wise?
Well, I worked that broadcast for TSN on Monday night, that Montreal Calgary game. That might have been one of the most unattractive hockey games I've seen all year. But I think from a Habs perspective, they got her done. That's all they care about. But that was tough to watch at times. But how about Tyler Toffoli? I mean, the Habs have been so inconsistent and are struggling to score again. But what a story he's been individually. Like, I tweeted this over the weekend, but I understand why Canucks fans are still so upset at their team for letting Tyler Toffoli go, and I get it. But Tyler Toffoli did not sign until the third day of free agency with Montreal. Like, what are 30 other teams doing? Yeah. It's not like you don't think Tyler Toffoli can score 30 goals. And as it turns out, he's having a much better season than that, in a shortened season. I mean, it's crazy what he's doing, but that's a remarkable story that he was just sitting there for 3 days and now he's third or fourth in the league in goal scoring.
So you see the Habs a lot. Like I watch, I'm watching on television, but I'm not breaking down their games like you are almost every night. And I say this at home, and my son and I have this. It's not, he dismisses my argument almost out of hand. I still think Montreal Canadiens, and let's assume that Carey Price is going to come back. He's been in concussion protocol, but he will come back. And let's assume good health for Carey Price going to the playoffs. I still think the Montreal Canadiens are built to be a handful in the playoffs. And I know they play poorly, and I know it's been disappointing. And, they made a race where there should have been no question that they were going to lock up at least fourth place in the North. So it hasn't gone down that way. I still think that team has the potential, and especially because it looks now for sure they're going to play Toronto, who looks locked into first place in the North. I still think they have the potential to give the Leafs all they can handle. Am I completely out to lunch on this?
No, I mean, listen, the Leafs are going to be a decided favorite, but you're right. I mean, the Habs are more built for the playoffs, especially when the officiating standard shifts a bit. Oh my gosh, are we allowed to say that? Is that reality? because the Habs special teams are not their friend, but suddenly when you can get away with a bit more and slowing down the skilled players on the Leafs and the Oilers and so on, that can only advantage Montreal. They've just been so inconsistent, though, that I can't tell you which version of the team would show up in the playoffs. I mean, there are nights, I was talking to an NHL head coach about this week, where he's like, some nights he looks at them and says, okay, they're going to be a grinding, tough out. But then two nights later, he's like, they're not very good. Yeah. So, and that's just what they've been. They've been really inconsistent. Now, come playoff time, Brendan Gallagher should be back or in around there. Don't have to tell you how big a loss he spent to that team.
For sure.
And they also get out of their cap / recall issues come the playoffs. I mean, they could dress all their kids or not all their kids, Caulfield and Romanoff and Jake Evans. They can dress whoever they want come playoff time. So, yes, I mean, with a healthy Carey Price, you never know. But I will tell you that I feel like the Leafs have answered every single question thrown at them. I mean, they really are the class of the division.
All right, and I'm with you, and I don't want to jinx it, but boy, I can't wait for Toronto Montreal. Like, we've been talking about this for years now. Like, you and I,
at 1979.
I know we've been always, okay, what would have to happen, and boy, it looks like it's going to happen. So anyway, we'll see what happens in the next 2 weeks. There are two other playoff races. I alluded to the Nashville Dallas tilt. Both teams taking it on the chin last night in the second of back to backs. That Dallas schedule is just murderous. If I'm not mistaken, they finished with seven straight on the road. It's amazing what that Dallas Stars team has done after their COVID outbreak to start the season, to stay in the hunt and all the injuries. I mean, we still haven't seen Tyler Seguin yet. Ben Bishop won't be back. Radulov won't be back. Anyway, but the I mean, to me, that the one it's been such a dynamic, compelling story. What Jason Robertson is doing there, and how he seems to be prepared to go toe to toe with the star of the West Division, Kirill Kaprizov of the Minnesota Wild, who I think a long time ago we had seeded the Calder Trophy as Rookie of the Year. But what a race for both those kids, and both those kids are so critical to the successes of their teams. I wonder what you make of it. And, you know, you and I vote on the Calder. What's it been like to watch those two kids, and specifically as their teams have, I think it's fair to say, and probably in both cases, have probably exceeded expectations given the circumstances that surround both of them?
Yeah, it's interesting. I was watching the overtime the other night where Jamie Benn scored the overtime winner, but Robertson set him up and just yep. a beauty feed. And he doesn't look like a rookie to me, that's for sure. But, you know, you mentioned Montreal being kind of the wounded animal who might be dangerous come playoff time. What about Dallas? I mean, Stanley Cup finalist, the whole world is against them in terms of everything that's been thrown at them this year. If they somehow got in, isn't that the ultimate wounded animal? I mean, geez, that's now the way Carolina's playing right now. I don't know if anyone can beat Carolina. And of course, you got Tampa, Florida. So it is a top heavy division, but. I would say that the Stars, to me, are a more dangerous first-round foe than Nashville, I think, all yes. things being equal.
Yeah, no question. Speaking of dangerous animal, what about the St. Louis Blues? Such an odd kind of dynamic with the Blues, you know, as they've gone along here and, you know, sort of aimless for a bit of it, and really taking advantage of a very soft lower half of that division, with all due respect to the Arizona Coyotes and the three California teams. But, you know, the Blues are back in fourth place. I can't imagine that they're not going to end up in fourth place in that division. The Coyotes just, they can't, you know, they're minus 24 goal differential. They're 2-8 in their last 10. Anyway, with all due respect to the Coyotes, they're cooked. But you talk about, they're not, to me, they're not so much the wounded animal, but are the Blues the kind of team where you're like, oh my gosh, let's not assume, and whether it's Colorado or Vegas, it ends up, it's likely going to be Vegas, I think, in first, but let's not assume this is a cakewalk in the first round for a team that 2 years ago won a Stanley Cup,
right.
Has Ryan O'Reilly, has Torrey Krug, who I think is finally finding a groove there. That depth, all that kind of stuff. What do you make of the Blues and how this is possibly shaping up as we go into the last couple of weeks?
You know, it's such an interesting division. I actually have a piece running today about the Avalanche, who, you know, yes, I think they're the team to beat, but Vegas will have something to say about that. But here's the thing. We have preordained a Vegas-Colorado second round for so long that there are a couple of things that are interesting that are at play here. One is that Minnesota is just not going away.
Yes.
I mean, they're just unbelievable. And Joe Sakic really had a lot of complimentary things to say about the Wild when I asked him about them this week. But you're right. And then you got the Blues, who are so inconsistent and look terrible 1 week, but then look like the old champs the next week. Who knows what version you're going to get from them. But at the end of the day, who's going to take them lightly? So, you know, I still think we're going to get Vegas, Colorado in the second round, but it's not the automatic ticket that I think maybe 6 weeks ago we would have thought, right? It's interesting.
Yeah. No, I think you're absolutely right. And I like the, you know, to me, and maybe I just project, but to me, Minnesota is going to be one of those teams, maybe the Blues too, because the expectations will certainly be muted come playoff time. But both Minnesota and St. Louis, to me, have that benefit of, it's like found money, especially Minnesota. Like, you know, and what a great job by Dean Evason and Bill Guerin there. And, you know, the kids getting an opportunity, and really, even before our eyes, you know, we're seeing some of those veteran players. You know, Zach Parise has had to, you know, assume a different, lesser role with that team. But the kids have really sort of stepped into the fore, and they're a ton of fun to watch now. And I, you know, in the past, sort of Minnesota was kind of like, well, kind of plodding. They were like, you know, anyway, it wasn't appointment hockey. But I love the way they play, and you're right. And they are going to be a handful getting the goaltending. Cam Talbot's been really, really good. It's a ton of fun. So let me ask it as a question. You know, where do you have a guy like Dean Evason, who I think fair to say, low profile among NHL coaches. But is he in? Should he be in your discussion for the Jack Adams as coach of the year?
Well, he will be for sure, because the Jack Adams, with all due respect, is an award for the most surprising team.
It's true.
I mean,
it is. Yeah, it is.
It just is what it is. So he will deservedly get some talk. And I think Joel Quenneville, for my money, will probably win it because no one had the Panthers doing what they're doing in Florida. And again, it's not like Rob Brind'Amour hasn't done a great job in Carolina. You know, it's not like Jared Bednar, who never gets a sniff because the Avs are just good all the time. You know, Pete DeBoer. But those teams were supposed to win.
Yes.
So yep. I really think, you know, Dean Evason and Joel Quenneville probably going to be a big part of the conversation. I wonder if Mike Sullivan does it. I mean, I think some people wondered about Pittsburgh's window and where that team was headed. And the Penguins, I think, you know, it's funny. I think some people just look at the brand and say, oh, yeah, the Penguins are there again. I don't think there was any guarantee the Penguins would do this again this year, in my mind.
No. No, absolutely not. So we're going to talk to Stan Bowman as promised in a moment or two. What's on your mind? You want to talk a little East? You want to talk Connor McDavid? You're getting up. You're playing hurt. I'm going to let you take the reins here as we close out this segment. What's on your mind?
I was thinking about this yesterday. You know, what Connor McDavid continues to do is just ridiculous, and he's going to win the Hart Trophy. Will it be one of the most lopsided votes in many years, do you think? I don't want to embarrass any of our colleagues in the PHWA, but what I fear, because we have open ballots, I fear for the writers who don't vote their first ballot to Connor McDavid for the kind of derision they're going to take from people, right?
Yeah.
I mean, how is he not on everyone's ballot as the first choice?
Yeah, it's like it is unbelievable. I remember writing this at the start of the season that, you know, to me, one of the challenges for Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl, of course, the defending Hart Trophy winner from last season, was to evolve their game and to be like not like Steve Yzerman was at the end, you know, sort of Frank Selke trophy worthy, but really become more complete players. And I think you see that. I just think he plays such a different game now, but it all comes, you know, his dynamic presence every night. I can't wait to watch the Oilers play because you just don't know what he's going to do. And you're right.
And there's no question. Imagine. Like, I think, you know, I'll obviously talk to a lot of different coaches and scouts and do my homework like you do at the end of the year before we vote. And I think Patrick Kane will be on my ballot somewhere. Nathan MacKinnon, Alexander Barkov, who still to this day is one of the most underrated superstars in our league, by the way. You know, Andrei Vasilevskiy. But there's a lot of good names that can fill out a five-man ballot. There's only one name at the top. This is one of the easiest Hart Trophy decisions that I can recall in 26 years of voting.
Yeah, it really is. And in fact, part of the discussion, I've seen it framed this way now is the race for second, like who is and you mentioned there's some great names and there's some really interesting, you know, sort of dynamics of once you get past Connor McDavid at number one and Sidney Crosby in Pittsburgh, a team that has just been, you know, decimated by injury and lots of turmoil around the Penguins. And there they are. I don't know if they're still in first place today, but within a point of first place. He's having another terrific year. And the guy I watched last night, now they ended up losing to Florida, but how important is UC Saros to the Nashville Predators, dead and buried, and now, you know, really control their own destiny in terms of getting back to the playoffs? UC Saros has been a one-man band there because the Preds are not very dynamic. They get outshot every single night, but he has carried them to the cusp of a playoff spot. So I think it's going to be fascinating to see how the rest of the bout looks after Connor McDavid.
Yeah, and you know, regardless of all this all ends for Nashville this year, don't you think that Saros's play is the prevailing story for that franchise? Because they've been waiting, right? They've been waiting for him to take the mantle and to be legit with it. So that's been a really good story.
Yeah, a lot of good. And some of those kids, Cunning and... Tolvanen finally really sort of hitting his stride, a little bit of a dip recently, but you can see now that the next wave is right there. And that's, that's an important franchise, and not just because I can drive there in 4.5 hours. And frankly, who does not want to go to Nashville at some point? So anyway, that's, it's exciting stuff. So, all right, we are going to chat with Chicago Blackhawks GM Stan Bowman as promised.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Visit DirecTV.com. Claim based on total games offered on national and regional sports networks with choice package or higher. Availability of RSNs varies by zip code and package. High-speed internet service required. Terms and restrictions apply.
Joining us through the wonders of technology now, Chicago Blackhawks GM Stan Bowman. Stan, thanks for coming to hang out with us. It's been a while. I always feel, in the normal world, our paths would cross, and whether it's in Chicago or GM's meetings or wherever, I feel a little bit out of touch. But thanks for coming to hang out with Pierre and I today.
Absolutely. You're right. It's strange. We haven't really crossed paths and with a lot of people with the way the world's going, but we've learned how to connect virtually, and it's been a decent surrogate.
Well, let's start with, I'm curious, as we get down the stretch here with the Blackhawks, I think sort of externally, people would look at this team and say, this has been a pretty successful year. Kids have really stepped to the forefront, played meaningful games well into the final third of the season, final quarter of the season. And I'm wondering if that's, how do you judge it? What kind of measuring stick are you using for this Chicago team that really, I think is in, we're starting to see sort of the changing of the guard and a new kind of identity, new kind of leaders on that team. How do you judge this season for the Blackhawks?
I think you summed it up pretty well there. We talked about this back in the off season. It was early October. We came out saying that we were going to be focusing on our young players, giving them an opportunity to grow. And, with that sometimes comes some uneven performances, but we knew that the path forward for us was to give bigger opportunities to a number of young players. And, those plans certainly got accelerated when we got the news right before the season broke that Kirby Dach and Jonathan Toews, Alex Nylander, those three guys weren't going to be playing certainly for the first stretch of the year. We've since got Kirby to come back, but it was it forced us to really even go further down that path with relying on young players. And you're right, we've seen a little bit of a transformation. Our team is very young right now. For a long time there we had a pretty stable group of players and probably tilted more towards the veterans, and as time has gone on, we've shifted. So now, the fact we had a really good, tough start to the year, but then we really got things going for a pretty good stretch there. And we haven't played as well lately. And I think, the measuring stick isn't so much the standings. It's the way that our team looks and the roles that the younger players have, because that's what we're going to be able to build on in the coming seasons.
Yeah. Although you do have a veteran player, we were just talking about the Hart Trophy conversation, Stan, and, I don't want to put you in a tough spot because I know you're obviously going to have a bit of a bias, but what Connor McDavid is doing right now, it's just mind blowing to me. But I did mention that a guy like Patrick Kane undoubtedly will be on my ballot. And, with all the young faces in your lineup and the transition in minutes and roles and sort of the evolution of your team. It's, I think it's amazing to see that he continues to do what he does almost in an unflinching way. Do you agree? Like, in other words, you know, your teammates keep changing, the team's getting younger, but Patrick Kane's, his consistency at an elite level, this might be one of his greatest years ever.
Yeah, you're right, Pierre. I've had the pleasure to watch him play for a long, long time. And what's amazing about Patrick is as he gets older, he seems to be able to maintain his level. And if anything, he's elevated his level the last few seasons here, which is unusual for players as they get into their early 30s. I think with him, he's got such good instincts and hockey sense, and it allows him, and his, you know, his skill level hasn't dropped off at all. So I think if anything, he's learned over time, you know, through experience, how to be even better. So he's been tremendous this season. And even going back the last couple, he seems to keep getting better, which is really unusual for players as they get that stage of their career. You know, it looks like he's going to play another 10 or 15 years at this point, just the way that he's playing. So yeah, he's certainly been our leader this year. He's taken on more of a leadership role as well. And he probably doesn't get as much credit for that. It was a couple of years ago when the World Championships, he was on the team and he was the captain for USA. And I remember I was part of that group. You could just see him really enjoy that role. He's always been a player that doesn't get the credit for his leadership, but so we've seen that this year with such a young group, and he's, you know, single-handedly kept us in games and when maybe we weren't playing our best, but he found a way to make something happen and tie the game or get it to overtime. And you know, he's a very unique player, and we're very fortunate to have him in Chicago.
There aren't many days that I don't or am not reminded of how old I am, but I do remember sitting with Patrick Kane and Jonathan Toews at the Blackhawks Hotel out just outside Chicago before the start of their first training camp, and like literally two young boys. And of course, Patrick Kane stayed in your house, lived with you, Stan, at the beginning, and now he's a father. And I'm just curious what your relationship is like with Patrick now at this stage, and do you, you know, I don't know, do you use him as a sounding board? Do you have conversations about personnel or about direction of the team, or is there, maybe it doesn't work that way, but I'm curious. I mean, you've literally known him since he was a teenage boy, you know, playing mini sticks with your boys in your basement.
Yeah, that's right. That's a good story. You know, looking back on it, does seem so long ago. I guess we're all getting old, but yeah, my son, he was 2 years old at the time. He's 15 now. We have a lot of memories of Patrick in that way, where he was like a big brother to my two boys. And yeah, we have a great relationship. I mean, I have a lot of respect for him as a person, as well as his knowledge of the game. Like, he's such a fan of the game. I mean, he lives and dies for hockey, and great insight into what makes players as good as they are, and great knowledge of the league, you know, from playing against these players. And you know, I do like to get his opinion on things. A lot of times it's maybe not so much personnel related, it's just, what does he see, what do you think about this, because he's such a student of the game. So yeah, like you said earlier, it's a special relationship. I've known him for a long, long time. And, you know, I've seen him grow up in front of our eyes here to the point where he's now, like I said, he's sort of the leader of the group. And at least this year he's been, not only with his play, but the way that he's carried himself. And, you know, we have a different group than we've had in the past. But Patrick's been excited to be part of it. I think that's what's fun to see, is he wants to win more than anybody, but he understands you know, that he can play a large role in getting us back to where we want to be.
Well, and you mentioned being part of a Team USA with him at the Worlds a few years ago, Stan. Obviously, there's a bigger Team USA that you're in charge of for the Olympics. And, well, we hope the NHL is going. That's not a done deal yet. And I know that time is of the essence here, between the GM meetings and the Board of Governors this week, that there was mention of the Olympics. And one hopes that the NHL and NHLPA can negotiate a deal with the IOC. But I guess you have the gig until told otherwise, right, in terms of NHL participation. And I can't think of an Olympic Games where I've felt this high on a Team USA in terms of your options, your depth. Honestly, over the years, you felt the U.S. was there with Canada, was there with Russia, but this to me will be potentially the best Team USA ever in a best-on-best event, and that's saying something. Do you feel the same way?
Yeah, well, first off, it's an honor to be in that position. You know, I'm very thankful to USA Hockey for the opportunity to be serving this role, and I've had the chance over the last 10 years to work in different capacities for USA Hockey. It's been something I really enjoy. I think it's a learning experience each time. You get a chance to work with different people who, you don't really spend that much time with. So I'm excited about the opportunity, and I'm really impressed with the talent that we have. I mean, I've known that for a long time, but obviously over the last couple months here, I've spent a lot more time really breaking it down and looking at players and putting ideas in my mind about what the roster might look like. And you're right, Pierre, it's this incredible talent, and it's going to make for some difficult decisions, but that's a good position. It means that you have a lot of really great candidates to make your team strong. So, it's a special event. Like you said, it's the best on best. So these are the best players in the world from, Canada certainly looks like a really strong group, but you look at the Russians, the Swedes, the Finns, mm-hmm. up and down, there's really impressive players for all these countries. So I don't think you have any easy outs. And as a result, it's a challenge, but it's the type of challenge that you really look forward to because it's such a unique experience.
Stan, can you walk us through now? Bill Guerin's the assistant GM, announced it when you were announced as the GM of Team USA for 2022 in Beijing. Can you walk us through, how are you and Bill doing things? When will you announce your maybe more expanded management team or people who will be helping out with scouting? Do you and Billy have an Olympic board in your respective offices, like him in Minnesota and you in Chicago? Is there a U.S. Olympic board? And what's the process of starting to, sort of hammer out what will be, and I think Pierre's right on, this should be the greatest American team of all time. So what's the process?
Yeah, well, first, Bill's been great. I mean, he's a good friend of mine. He's a really good hockey man as a player. And now you can see he's done a really nice job early on here in Minnesota to get their team in a good spot. I think at this point, what we're trying to do is you want to cast a wide net. It's close, we're looking at next February, there still is a lot of time. So what we don't want to do is narrow the focus too much too early. So I think we're casting a little bit of a wider net now to try to bring in the group of players that are legitimate contenders. And now we've done that. What we're doing is we're focusing on the players in our respective divisions. That it's a unique year here. Like, we only play against our division in person. There's certainly ability to watch all these players on video. The players in consideration here for the Olympic team are they're all very well-known players. They've been prominent players for years. So I think we have a pretty good read on them. I think the next big task would be to choose the coaching staff, which, we have not done that yet. And I think once that happens, then we can probably get maybe a little bit more focused on things, because certainly in an event like this where, you know, you're not preparing for an entire season, you're preparing for a few week tournament. I think you have to be on the same page as your coach, as far as, you know, whether it's the style of play or the style of player that, you know, certain players are, you know, it doesn't matter who the coach is, you know, that they're going to be effective. But then other things, as you start getting down to the roles, I think it's important to have the input of the coach. So that's probably the next thing that we're going to do, you know, as we get through the end of the regular season here and into the off season, we'll focus on that. But there's plenty of work to be done. And like you mentioned earlier, Pierre, there's some things out of our control that, you know, the NHL and the IOC and IIHF are working through, and hopefully we can get that all straightened out so that we'll definitely be going forward like that.
How much of an impact, if at all, is the fact that, you know, and I was kind of amazed when I confirmed this, but the tournament's going to be played on NHL ice. And it's, you know, I don't have to tell you that, you know, in Sochi, Canada in particular, I mean, they made such a big deal about, you know, bringing in Ralph Kruger, and I nicknamed him Dr. Big Eyes, but there was such a concerted effort to alter really their playing style because of the lack of success Canada had, generally speaking, on big ice. And as it turns out, this is going to be on the ice that you guys are used to in Beijing. I mean, does that affect maybe two or three roster decisions, or is that overblown, do you think?
Well, I think it's actually helpful that that is the case, because your first instinct, international competition, it's going to be on the larger ice surface, and it does change things, you know, not dramatically. I mean, at the end of the day, it's hockey, still hockey, but the different dimensions does change some aspects of it. So the fact that we're going to be using the NHL size rink, I think it probably simplifies the selection process a little bit, because this is what we're used to watching, is these players perform in the NHL on that size rink. So I think in this instance, it's actually probably going to make things a little bit easier, simplify it for us.
Stan, when you think about the pool of talent that's available to you, to me, one of the interesting dynamics is that, of course, without NHL participation in South Korea in 2018, I mean, we're going to be 8 years between, hopefully, NHL participation in Olympic Games. You had a World Cup of Hockey, which was, you know, sort of hybrid. There were some wrinkles to it in 2016, but there isn't going to be the sort of normal transition, you know, like we've seen from Canada, from Olympic Games to Olympic Games. And I think the same with Team USA, you know, from Vancouver to Sochi. Does that make it harder, or is what kind of challenges does that present? Because there isn't that kind of, you know, connection between best on best events.
Well, I suppose from an analysis point, it might make it harder, but from our standpoint, we're looking forward, not really looking backwards to what was most recently. And you're right, it's been a while since it's been this format, but I don't know that changes anything for me. I think when you're maybe talking about it or trying to build up to it, there's not as much you can look back to the most recent Olympics and see what went well and what didn't. That's not really applicable now, but but we're, you know, when we're building the team, we're probably not focused on that anyway. We're looking forward to what could be and what players are going to help us, you know, in certain capacities. So I think for us, it's not really an issue.
And I guess the last thing I would ask on Team USA before we move on here, Stan, is your depth and goal. I think you got to feel pretty good about your options there, and arguably the best goaltending in the tournament, although Andrei Vasilevskiy might have a different say in that for Russia. But, you know, we talk about Hellebuck and Gibson and your other choices. That's a pretty good spot to be in for you guys.
Very much so. Yeah, I was fortunate enough to work on the World Cup event. I was with the the North Team North America. And I remember when we were planning that about a year out from beginning, I was working with Peter Chiarelli building that team. And we actually were trying to get an exemption from the league to allow us to, we had no goalies when we started the process.
Right. I remember this. Yes.
Yeah. Gibson and Hellebuck hadn't even played yet. And Matt Murray would, and then by the end of that season, when we actually had to choose the team, all three of those goalies had broken through to the NHL. But they were, when we first started to sit down and talk about the team, they were not even in the NHL yet. And here we are now, a number of years later, and those two, well, Gibson and Hellebuck, obviously in particular, as Americans, they're prominent goaltenders in the league. So, yes, it's a and it's not just those two. We have other goalies too. So I think we're in a good spot from that perspective, which is it's clearly a very important position to be strong at. So yeah, that's good.
Good stuff. Stan, just before we let you go, you alluded to Jonathan Toews, and of course, unable to play this season, but it does sound in recent days like there's been at least some initial signs of optimism that he may be able to return. I just wonder what that's been like for you. And again, knowing Jonathan as you have Patrick Kane for, you know, from the very beginning, what it's been like for you this season in terms of keeping up with him and communication with the Jonathan and his group, and if there is any kind of update on what we might expect vis-a-vis a potential return for him next season.
I have talked to Jonathan recently, a couple, you know, certainly a few times throughout the year. What I tried to do when I spoke to him right before our season began and was to give him the space and not be checking in with him weekly to saying what's the update. You know, we kind of left it where we'll stay in touch, but you know, when you have something to share, you know, we'll be here for you. In the meantime, we're going to let you take care of yourself. So, but I had a good chat with Jonathan recently, and kind of along those lines, you know, he's doing well. You know, he's certainly not back playing, but you know, can report that we had a good conversation, and you know, nothing's changed for the future as far as looking ahead to next year. We kind of take it as it comes, but you know, none of us can predict the future. But I had a good chat with him, and we talked about our team for a while, and just not even about hockey for a while. And it was good to reconnect with him. So, you know, I think in today's world, I understand the desire. Everybody cares about Johnny and they want the update. They want to know what's going on. It's coming from a place of concern for him. But I also know that sometimes you have to let people do things on their terms and their time. And, you know, at some point, kind of let Jonathan speak for himself. But I would say it's good news, not bad news, when I spoke with him recently.
Wow, that would be great to have him back. You might be getting a call from Doug Armstrong, Stan, to get an update too, right? In terms of the Olympics, but
that's great. No kidding.
Good stuff. All right, well, Stan, we're going to let you get back on with your busy day, but it's always great to catch up, and thank you for sharing your thoughts on the Blackhawks and Team USA. And I know I'm sure I can speak for Pierre on this. It'd be nice to catch up in a real rink, watching some real hockey down the road. But thank you so much for coming and hanging out with us today. It's been great.
Yeah, I enjoyed it. Good talking to both of you, and we'll certainly keep in touch as we go forward here.
Thank you, Stan.
All right, take care.
I always like to talk to Stan Bowman, Pierre. It's always a very, you know, it's just very thoughtful and measured, and I'm pumped to see how this Team USA reveals itself, because lots of options. And your question on the NHL style ice is critical, because it's, you know, there's a high level of skill, but there's tons of interesting character grit type players that could make their case to be on Team USA and you know, facing off against Team Canada or Finland that will be, you know, hard to play against. But do you have an initial thought on Team USA and where they might fit in?
Oh my gosh. Like, I just think, you know, one of the things that we've always done, as you know, is when Canada announces their best on best roster, we do a B team. Just to show that
team snub.
Yeah, because the B team is pretty darn impressive. I think you're going to be able to do it for Team USA with the same kind of level of, can you believe these 23 guys weren't named? I think that's how difficult these choices are going to be, but difficult in a good way. And outside of the obvious, you know, Matthews, Kane, etc. But the guys that have really, like Kyle Connor in Winnipeg, I mean, he's one of the best wingers in the NHL. Like the options for Stan Bowman here and putting this team together are just ridiculous. And again, in goal, I mean, arguably, you know, I think the debate these days is between Hellebuck and Vasilevsky, right? In terms of the best two goalies in the world. And then John Gibson has faced a lot of rubber the last couple of years. I think he'll fare a little better in a Team USA uniform. So they're deep in goal. They're deep on the blue line. That's going to be a hell of a team. And, you know, you got Adam Fox, who's in the Norris conversation this year, part of this youth movement for Team USA. It's going to be a roster to behold, I think.
Oh my gosh. And even in the last 3 or 4 months, I remember putting together sort of the shadow US roster, in early February. So we were projecting a year out from the start of the 22 Olympics in Beijing. And, you know, like guys like Alex DeBrincat weren't even I admit it. He wasn't on my roster. Adam Fox wasn't. I might have mentioned him, but he wasn't on my roster either. And both those guys, I think you would probably put in now as locks. But to your point, I mean, there are going to be very, very good players who don't get named to this U.S. roster if it unfolds the way we hope that it does with the NHL back in the Olympics next February. So,
mm-hmm.
When you're hiring for your small business, you want to find quality professionals that are right for the role. That's why you have to check out LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn Jobs has the tools to help find the right professionals for your team faster and for free. When you're trying to grow a business, the caliber of person you bring in to help you do that is really important. And LinkedIn makes it really easy to interview the right people for the role, quality people. LinkedIn isn't just a job board. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. On LinkedIn, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Hire professionals like a professional on LinkedIn. 2.5 million small businesses use LinkedIn for hiring. Post your job for free at linkedin.com/NHL show. That's linkedin.com/NHL show to post your job for free. Terms and conditions apply.
And you know what the great thing about you mentioning Adam Fox is, it's a great segue because...
I knew that was coming.
It's a great segue. You know, listen, I'm paying attention this week, and it's a great segue into Ask the Dorks. We have some really great questions, as we always do, but I'm really pleased to transition into the question section. And this comes from Rob at RangerRob13. I wonder who he cheers for. But a question about Adam Fox. And can he win the Norris if the Rangers maintain their standings league-wide? They're 14th. They have we didn't even mention them in terms of playoff race because they're just outside the edge. Boston's playing really well. In fact, I know, and Larry Brooks, our good pal from the New York Post, wrote this today, and I think he's probably accurate. Maybe the team most, not even like, but maybe in the sights now for the Rangers or the New York Islanders, but it's hard to imagine the Rangers being in the playoffs at the end in that tough East Division. But does that impact Adam Fox vis-a-vis his ability to win the Norris?
Well, I think it's a slam dunk that he's going to be nominated for the Norris. I'm probably leaning Victor Hedman right now. And again, I think that being on a playoff team and not being on a playoff team often factors into how I slot everyone in at the end as a deciding factor. Not as the factor, but as an element to throw in there at the end when you got guys that you're so close together and that you're struggling to differentiate. But so it doesn't help Adam Fox that the Rangers might miss the playoffs, but if he's not nominated for the Norris, I'll be shocked. I mean, I think he's a slam dunk to be one of the three guys in my mind.
It's interesting, and I know that, in fact, our good pal Joe Smith in Tampa wrote this. You know, Victor Hedman's had some struggles of late, right? It's not the, and I think if we
don't
had
care.
This conversation, yeah, I know. All right, 6 weeks ago, it might have been more of a runaway. Maybe it's a little bit closer now. All right, you need to bring in the analysts in there to you. Danny Lambert, 17, is the West the best division? I don't know that it is. I don't think it is, really. But, and more to the point, can the Minnesota Wild make it out of the West Division and make a serious playoff run? And we talked a little bit about this, but I wonder if the West is ripe for, because you know there are going to be some upsets. I wonder if the West is ripe for that.
I mean, as long as they're pretty much healthy, I think Colorado and Vegas are going to end up in the second round, but Minnesota is an unbelievable story. Like I honestly didn't think they were for real. And halfway through the year, and now they've sold me. Like there's a sustainability to the way they play, their structure, the depth, the different ways they can win games, the way to defend. They're for real and they're going to be a tough out. But at the end of the day, not only do I think Colorado and Vegas are the best two teams in the division, but they might be the best two teams in the NHL.
Yeah.
So I just think, again, health permitting. I mean, you know, Brandon Saad now is out 2 to 4 weeks for Colorado. You just hope both those teams, Vegas and Colorado, can show up to the playoffs with their roster intact, because that's what you want to see from these big-time teams, is to have a chance to really show what they can do with a healthy roster. I only mentioned that because he just fell for Colorado last year in the bubble with it. You know, the top two goalies injured and so on. Kind of, it stinks because you didn't get to see them at their best.
Yeah, no, there's no question about that. And I am fascinated to see what will happen in the West. I'm fascinated to see how Minnesota responds, because, it, you know, for those kids, this will be a real good learning experience for them, even if they don't, you know, aren't able to knock off one of those top two teams. And that's assuming that they don't even, yeah, they could, you know, they could end up finishing in second. They could have home ice advantage in the first round. So it's fascinating to see. How about this? Ernie Morris, I'll give you a real simple one. Will Jack Eichel be traded this offseason?
Oh, you know, I'm going to say no, based on this very simple scenario. And it's obviously possible that he might be, given everything that's transpired, but he's not at his top value right now. And I don't know, if you're the Sabres, how you win this trade if you go ahead and move him when he's a $10 million player coming off an injury-riddled season. So I don't see the... Unless Jack Eichel storms into Kevin Adams' office and demands to get dealt, I don't see the value in doing that now. I think that you got to get Jack Eichel back to being Jack Eichel before you even entertain that, in my mind.
Are your feelings about the Sabres, have they changed over the last, say, 2 or 3 weeks? I think Don Granato has done such a nice job there, and there does seem to be, now listen, it could hardly be worse, but it just seems like there is a different vibe around there, and I wonder if that extent, you know, like, of course, Jack Eichel is hurt, he's not playing, but I just wonder if there is sort of a fresh page element to what's going on in Buffalo, and you have to think that Don Granato is going to get a good, long, hard look at keeping that job. I think he's earned certainly the right to be in the final discussion, but do you feel any differently about the Sabres because they seem to have turned a little bit of a corner?
Not really.
Yeah, okay. All right, that's why I ask, right? That's good to ask. All right, Ed, here's the final question. I always like to throw in one As you know, my friend Al, he sends in questions every week, but we're not going to take one here. But this is from good friend of ours, Steve Irwin. If he regrets not getting Aaron Judge from me in our baseball pool. So there you go. That's it.
I made a trade that I'm in first place right now, which is fleeting. I could easily not be for the rest of the year, but I'm currently in first place in our AL-only fantasy baseball league, and I traded Gleyber Torres, the Yankee shortstop, this week because I got so tired of him struggling. But I traded him for Trey Mancini. But I had made an offer to Steve Irwin for Aaron Judge, and Steve later told me that he wished he had acted quicker because he might have said yes to my trade. But I'm good with Trey Mancini. He's an RBI machine.
All right, my friend. Well, listen, it's been terrific as always chatting. I'm glad you're feeling better. What else we got going on here? You should join Ian Mendez and Sean Down Goes Brown McIndoe for the Athletic Hockey Show on Thursday at the Athletic. How about Brett McLean, the assistant coach of the Minnesota Wild, joins Mike Russo this week on Straight from the Source. Did you say last week you wonder if it has every single person in the Wild organization been on Straight from the Source with Mike Russo? He never calls us, though. Does he ever call you to go on the podcast?
He's called me to go on the radio with him, but not his podcast.
Yeah, me either. All right. And you should check out our comment section for each podcast episode at the Athletic app and rate and subscribe to the Athletic Hockey Show on Apple. If you aren't already a subscriber, I can't believe there are any people like that. Go to theathletic.com/hockeyshow and receive a subscription for just $3.99 per month. Good job by you. Stay healthy, stay safe, my friend, and we'll do it all again next week.
Right on, right on.